Good morning, Your Honor. I'm Jamie Jensen. I represent Ms. Champion in this case. And actually, I'm kind of surprised to even be here bringing this motion. This is.
Would you like to reserve any time?
Yes, I'd like to reserve three. Thank you. To be here because this is a case where the trial court determined facts in a personal injury case. Now, certainly the law in a personal injury case is pretty simple: duty, breach, cause, and damages. But the facts are usually left for trial, and here the trial court determined the facts before the trial even started, based only on summary judgment motion. In this particular case...
Well, isn't that because the judge determined that, as a matter of law, the palette was open and obvious?
Yes, Your Honor, that would be correct, and there was a palette.
So doesn't the court determine duty?
The court determines duty. That was not determined in this case. It was causation is the only issue that was before the court. There wasn't duty or breach or damages. Simply causation was the only one that they were bringing. And open and obvious, Your Honor, is a fact question. The Supreme Court has said that on whether an item is open and obvious is a fact question.
What case are you relying on?
That would be the Milson versus City of Leiden.
Is it always a fact question?
They said it was always a fact question. Open and obvious would always be a fact question.
But and isn't there a second part to that duty under the restatement? That is, even if it is open and obvious, the business should expect that the person who's injured will not discover or realize the danger or will fail to protect themselves against it. Isn't that an issue of fact here?
Yes, I believe that it is, Your Honor. And that's why that we believe that this should have gone to trial rather than be determined on this. The open and obviousness in the Milson question or Milson versus City of Leiden question was left simply as a fact question. And also in the Hines case, Your Honor, it says that the customer is free to walk around. Their eyes do not need to be riveted in this particular case on the floor, but they're free to walk around and look at the products. But as far as the pallet lifter is concerned, it was a colorful pallet lifter in a store full of colorful items. It's a retail store, so every product has got its color trying to draw your attention. So it could be seen. It might be missed. The shelves have their own color. There are people walking up and down. So should it have been seen? Potentially. But in this particular case, Ms. Champion was looking up at the toilets, and I presume they have the toilets high so that they're not accidentally used by children or something in the day, but they're above eye level. So she'd be walking along looking up at the product, trying to find what she did. She did not see it. And we claim that she did not see it, and that's why she fell. So the only question that I thought was a question in this case was that instant between the time she walked along looking up at the toilets and the time that she was laying on the pallet. Nobody exactly saw what happened that exact instant. She says that her shoe was injured. She has said she had a bruise on her foot. There's been no indication that she's prone to falling. So our argument was that that's a fact question of whether the pallet caused her to fall or not, and it shouldn't have been determined by the trial court prior to the trial. And in so doing, we felt that the court was holding us to an improperly impossible standard of proving at summary judgment precisely and exactly what happened. And that's not the standard of review here, Your Honor. It's whether or not there's reasonable inferences from the facts. And in this particular case, the reasonable inferences is that it could have happened, could have gone one way or another.
Well, if it's equally likely that it happened in two separate ways, have you brought enough evidence forward to create a genuine issue of fact?
We believe that we have, Your Honor.
No. That I know you believe that you have. My question is, if you bring evidence that A is likely and B is equally likely,
yes.
B there's no liability, A there is liability, have you presented enough evidence to create an issue of fact to go to trial?
If we brought, I'm not sure why I would bring two sets of facts, but that...
Well, you're going to bring one set and the defense
right.
is going to bring another set.
Right.
If if there isn't evidence from which a jury can could conclude that either A or B is more likely, but only that they're equally likely, are you entitled to a trial?
Entitled to a trial, yes. Entitled to a verdict, perhaps not, because then it would be 50-50, and we have the burden of being at least...
There is a body of case law out there that says if you present evidence only that A or B occurred and that they're equally likely, that you're not entitled to a trial.
It's called preponderance.
Right. No, I understand the preponderance, and that's why I said we have to be at 51%. And in that, yes, we did bring a fact question. Lowe's did not bring a fact question. There is no other fact question that the other side brought. If we were doing our 50% against their 50%, yes, we could be in that position. In this case, we have 100%. They have presented no facts. All they've done is said, we said, she was walking through, she looked up, she hit the pallet, she fell down. And their response is, no, she didn't.
No, they actually said she tripped over her own feet.
And there's no support for that. Yeah, they suggested that perhaps she might have slipped over her own feet. There's no indication that she was prone to falling. There's no indication that of any other purpose. Yeah, they did suggest.
So reasonable minds can differ.
Yes.
That what you're saying?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, and that is what gets us to a trial on this. But I guess what I wanted.
The argument is that it's more people could draw the inference that it's more likely than not that she tripped over the pallet.
Yes. Yes, that's our belief. There are two orders that we wanted to have overturned by this court, and the first one was that that 12 of our proofs were stricken by the court, and then the second one is that summary judgment was granted because we had no facts, since most of our facts had just been stricken. Of the 12 elements that were stricken, six of them were argument. So I found no mechanism where the court can strike our argument from a brief and then rule against us because we didn't have any argument. So of the 12 that were stricken, six of them weren't even fact questions. The other six, which were fact, were supported. And I would bring the court's attention to this is, it feels to me in this case that this is Lowe's using its size against an 87-year-old woman to try and overburden her, overwhelm her with litigation. They have asked that her evidence be stricken, and I would bring the court's attention right to...
Counsel, I think it's pretty clear we strike nothing from a summary judgment record. We simply review it independently. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court, Troy Hunter on behalf of Defendant Respondent Lowe's. On September 4th, 2013, there was an MSJ hearing before Honorable Millie Judge, and Judge granted 12 of 13 motions to strike improper, inadmissible evidence contained in the plaintiff's response materials, and she also...
Why is it not just a request to rule evidence is inadmissible? A motion to strike suggests it's getting removed from the record. Why is that inappropriate, Randy?
Because, Your Honor, there were multiple places, well, at least 12 of them that we identified, where the plaintiff tried to submit as fact conclusory statements or arguments
That would be a reason why the court shouldn't consider it, because it's inadmissible evidence. But why shouldn't it stay in the record for the appellate court to review it?
Well, it is before the court. I mean,
a motion to strike is to remove. Why isn't it a motion to determine that this evidence is inadmissible, the same way you would object at trial to the admission of evidence? You wouldn't move to strike the witness.
Well, Your Honor, in a motion for summary judgment, only reliable, admissible, competent evidence should be considered by the judge.
About that.
Okay.
It's this concept that you move to strike that I find troubling and don't see any place in the rule for it.
Well, I think we did rely on proper authority in the motion to strike, and at least Judge Millie agreed by striking the 12 of the 13 statements that we found objectionable, and we sought the same remedy before this court. Judge then went on to dismiss the plaintiff's claims on two separate legal grounds, one being that the plaintiff failed to make a prima facie case of negligence by failing to establish breach or causation. And secondly, she held up this photo and said that this is by definition an open and obvious condition for which Lowe's owed no duty to warn or protect. Those are both legal grounds that this case was dismissed on.
Did she discuss both prongs of the open and obvious because as you heard from Judge Lau, even if it is open and obvious, if you can reasonably anticipate that someone won't appreciate the danger or will, for some reason, be looking elsewhere, liability can still attach.
I don't recall if Judge specifically addressed that in her oral ruling, but it was addressed in our pleading papers and in oral argument and before this court. It was addressed by looking at it from the standpoint of an open and obvious condition is determined to be such if it's open and obvious to a reasonable person in a similar situation as the plaintiff. And we have that here in the form of two independent witnesses.
Let me give you the plaintiff's argument to the contrary and have you respond. It's open and obvious if I'm looking down the aisle, but if you've taken measures to distract me, to cause me to look at the shelving as I'm progressing down the aisle so I'm not watching where I'm going, then perhaps you should appreciate that I won't see obstructions in the aisle. I'll give you an analogy. I set a cup of coffee down next to the couch in my house, and I can see it plain as day. But I decide to watch what's on television as I walk around the couch, and I don't see the cup of coffee because my attention's been distracted, the same way the items in the shelving are intended to distract the shopper's attention.
First of all, Your Honor, premises owners are not insurers of the safety of everybody who walks on the premises.
You're missing the point.
No, I'm not, Your Honor. I'm responding.
Answer my question.
I am. That was just my first part. Second part
but
being.
It has nothing to do with what I asked you, though.
A cup of coffee is not a 6-foot-tall, bright yellow piece of equipment with a bright red pallet attached to it on a contrasting colored floor. And that's 20 feet into the aisle, and that two independent witnesses have testified that before they even entered the aisle, where the product is displayed for customers to look at and to purchase, they observe the pallet and the pallet lifter in the aisle, which is there to be seen, which also should have been seen by Ms. Champion if she was paying any attention at all as she was entering the aisle, before she ever got to the point of looking at the merchandise in the aisle.
She not realize, let's say she's looking at these toilets and she's moving down the aisle. She doesn't realize she's 20 feet down because she's just been paying attention to the toilets as Lowe's intended she would.
And that could have been a child that was sitting there that she tripped over, if there was a child sitting there, if she even tripped over the pallet. We don't know. She doesn't know. She has no recollection, no memory whatsoever of the accident. Mr. DeGino and Ms. Eaton, they could not offer anything as to why she fell. All they could testify to is where she landed. That's all. That's all the evidence we had. That's all the evidence Judge had.
Evidence as well that corroborates the plaintiff's case. And that's what trials are for.
Well,
injury to the front part of her foot. She has injuries to her face. She's found and picked up off the pallet. She's only so tall, so she has to be within a certain distance of the pallet in order to impact it with her face.
The pallet, correct, Your Honor. She's actually much taller than the pallet is wide. Had she actually tripped on the pallet, she would have smashed into the pallet lifter that the pallet was actually attached to. There is no evidence that that's the case. All they know is that they found her lying on the pallet. Well, if she's lying on the pallet, there's no way her feet can be against the pallet. Again, she's taller than the pallet is wide. So there's no way that she could have tripped on the pallet and landed on the pallet and not been up against the pallet lifter. That's not possible.
So we've heard argument from counsel that whether the pallet was open and obvious is, according to the Supreme Court, always a question of fact. So open and obvious is always a question of fact. What's your position?
Unless reasonable minds could not differ. And we, again, have two reasonable minds here who testified that as soon as they could even look down the aisle, they observed the pallet and the pallet lifter. And those are, I don't think anybody's disputing that the two eyewitnesses were reasonable persons.
Is that enough to satisfy it, that you show two people can see it so that it must be obvious to everybody?
I think it is, especially when one of them is red-green colorblind and couldn't even appreciate the bright red color of the palette like Miss Eaton or Miss Champion could have and should have. He still observed it, even though it didn't appear bright red to him.
Got two people who saw it, one person who claimed she didn't see it. So,
well, it's a legal question.
Actually, you have a second. The second witness said she didn't see it. Her companion told her, oh, by the way, be careful of the pallet. And she said, gosh, if you hadn't told me about it, I wouldn't have noticed it. Isn't that what the testimony is?
I don't believe so. I may be incorrect, but I don't believe so.
Correct.
Okay.
That's what
I know he said that he told her to be careful because he observed it, but I recall in her testimony independently she observed it as well, and that he did tell her to, and warned her about it, but I don't believe it was her first notice of it, that she personally noticed it before he ever said anything to her.
In your request to the judge to exclude certain statements that were made in the brief, do you concede that some of those statements were argument? And if so, what was the justification for excluding them?
Argumentative assertions are not evidence.
Well, but...
And that is what they were...
We could say every brief we read then shouldn't be considered.
I understand that, Your Honor. But if you're using the argument as evidence, then it's improper. If your argument is without support, that it was an inherently dangerous condition, you have no expert declaration stating that, you have no evidence otherwise to it other than you stating it, that is, yes, argument, I agree, but it's not evidence.
Okay, but why do you get to strike argument rather than say that's just argument, Your Honor, they don't have any evidence, so we're entitled to prevail because they have to present evidence instead of argument?
That is the process that we chose to proceed in this matter, was to move to strike it.
Wisdom of that, because it troubles us that you would move to strike argument rather than simply making your own argument that what they have to produce is evidence, and that's what CR 56 requires they come forward with.
Correct, and that was our argument, that this was not evidence on these issues that they purported to be evidence on, and the judge agreed.
That's saying strike it, Your Honor.
I'm sorry?
That's much different than saying strike it, Your Honor.
What we were saying is that this is all the evidence that...
Motions to strike, and frankly, it's a process that we find troubling, and I'm trying to...
I understand.
...get the message to you, and I hope you do really understand.
I do, Your Honor. I do. I think...
It's Cameron versus Murray that actually says precisely the point that Judge Leach is making, so you might want to take a look at that for the future.
Thank you. Thank you. I think that even if you take all of those motions to strike and reverse them, this case still gets dismissed on the two legal grounds. Why? Because those statements were stricken because they weren't evidence. So even if they remain in the brief, they're still not evidence. There is no evidence as to causation. There is no evidence that Lowe's breached any duty to Mrs. Champion. And under the cases of Little versus Countrywood Homes, Moore versus Haig, and Suriano versus Sears, the plaintiff had a burden to present more evidence than she did in this case, which is none. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. In answer, Judge Leach, to your indication about whether it should have been stricken or found inadmissible, most of the facts in this case were brought in by counsel himself, and we took many of them to be unopposed. And to that extent, and going back to my earlier statement that I thought that this was just Lowe's using their weight against Ms. Champion, I would direct you to his own brief on this, to page 12, and I can read this. It says, one of the sentences that we said that they had disagreed with us is, while shopping, she was directed to look up into the shelves as she was directed along the aisle by Mr. Nash. And counsel has said that that was argumentative, speculative, without personal knowledge, conclusory. But then you go to page 4 of his own brief, and he says that while they were walking, the Lowe's employee discussed toilet options with her, writing down model numbers and color. Well, that places her there looking at toilets with the assistance of the employee. Then it says, his brief, his support, Ms. Champion testified that if you decide on a toilet, you look down below, there are cartons of toilets below, and toilets are boxes underneath, and the toilets on display are on top. Well, he's just set up all of the facts we need that then he turns around on page 12 and tries to exclude. So it's our feeling that this is not a good faith action on his part. It's simply trying to overburden his champion by bringing in facts that, where there is none, no question. And as far as the pallet, there was no purpose for that pallet or pallet lifter to be in the aisle at that time. It was not available to customers. It was not being used by Lowe's. It simply, pardon me?
Does that matter?
I believe that it does, Your Honor, because they've placed an unsafe condition in the middle of the aisle, and that's what caused her to fall down.
Is there anything in the restatement duty that justifies putting something there because it's part of business operations as opposed to otherwise? Isn't the test simply whether it's open and obvious?
No, Your Honor. There is one that's whether or not it's, and I'm afraid I don't have the case for it, where there is a question of whether or not it's something that a customer could use. And if a customer can't use it, then there's a question about whether it has to be there. And I'm sorry, I don't have the case for that. I have nothing further.
Thank you.